Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
And welcome inside the playbook, everyone, for week number 3 for the New England Patriots. Are we on here? Devin? There we go. All right, now that's it. Ta-da! Now it's working. We just got a little bit of a jumble in the studio today with some TV stuff being taped in our adjoining studio, but we'll get back to the business at hand here. It is week number 3 for the Patriots, and Buffalo Bills coming up this Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern time kickoff with the Buffalo Bills here at Gillette Stadium on Sunday. Leading off the program today, John Murphy is the play-by-play voice of the Buffalo Bills, and he joins us now here in Patriots Playbook. John, thanks for a little time kind of lead off the program today. Sure appreciate it.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Good to be with you again. Let's kind of start at it like this. 2 weeks for the Bills, an 0-2 start, a new coach, and already a quarterback change. So, in all honesty, do you kind of feel like maybe there's some grasping at straws here? Is this a panic move? What do you read into Chan Gailey's decision to kind of make this change at quarterback this early in the season?
Well, it's a desperate move, and that's a good time to be desperate the way they played the first few weeks, I think. You know, if you look, think about the way the season began, the offseason began, Gailey said it was an open competition for quarterback, and Trent Edwards got the bulk of the snaps in preseason, but and Gailey said just yesterday there wasn't that much separating.
Unfortunately, we just lost him. All right, we'll bring him back here in just a second, but the phone line just disconnected, so we'll try it again here in a moment. At any rate, what's today, Friday the 13th? It kind of seems like it here. The Patriots will end up going into this game, obviously, a decided favorite. And once we get John back on the line, the one thing that I guess is a little bit surprising to me over the fact that this team is a 13.5, 14-point favorite going into the game on Sunday is the fact that you come off of a game this past Sunday against the Jets in which it was incredibly disappointing. You kind of felt like the team not only left something on the field, but maybe, just maybe, that the effort wasn't quite where you thought it would be. So because of that very fact, I kind of felt like the point spread was a little bit high, realizing that point spread isn't everything. It's just sort of a barometer, a measuring stick between the two teams. But then when you add to it the fact that, as we were getting into with John there a couple of moments ago, add to it the fact that here's a team that is already making a switch at quarterback 2 weeks into the season because they haven't generated 400 total yards combined in the first 2 weeks of the season. It's a rather amazing prospect, just from strictly a planning point of view. All right, shall we try that again? John, you back with us?
I'm back with you, yeah.
Okay, sorry about that. Phone line dropped. It's like a three-ring circus around here today, so par for the course. We were in mid-discussion, I apologize for that, about Chan Gailey making the switch at quarterback, and obviously Ryan Fitzpatrick had played against the Patriots a year ago, pretty close game played in Buffalo. It was a 7-point game. So if you could then kind of pick up where I think you left off and just kind of tell us why you think Chan made this move 3 weeks into the season.
Well, I think they were desperate. They're not getting anything done offensively in the first couple of weeks. They struggled to make first downs and, get one offensive touchdown in each of the first two games. I just think, in Gailey's mind, there was not a whole lot separating all three quarterbacks on the roster, and, it was probably the easiest fix to make, changing the quarterback. Fitzpatrick, a guy with 8 starts for the Bills last year, 23 NFL starts on his resume. I just think it was, As Gailey said, he needed a spark, he needed to do something, and this was the easiest fix they could find.
I noticed that there was some reaction to that, and maybe even some Bills fans reacting somewhat negatively to that by saying that, Chan had kind of called the quarterbacks rather equal, and I can see the point where you say you need a spark, but in terms of ability, do you feel like Fitzpatrick brings something to the table that Trent Edwards does not?
Yeah, they're different. They're different quarterbacks. So Trent has talent. There's no question about that. He's very smart. Trent Edwards is smart, and he works hard, and I think coaches appreciate his approach to the game. But Ryan's got a different skill set. Fitzpatrick is a little bit more mobile than Trent Edwards. Fitzpatrick, and I think there's a different demeanor, which is maybe the biggest difference between them. Fitzpatrick is willing to take shots and to try to fire it down into tight windows downfield, whereas Trent Edwards is a little bit more reluctant to do that and maybe will settle for the check off, the dump off pass a little bit too often. I think they feel like they need to make something happen downfield. They need the threat of the deep pass, and I think they feel Fitzpatrick brings that, and they weren't getting that from Trent Edwards.
John Murphy is the voice of the Buffalo Bills, joining us here inside Patriots Playbook. Patriots and the Bills again at 1 o'clock on Sunday here at Gillette Stadium. I realize that 0-2 probably isn't deep enough into the season to really kind of get a fair assessment, but at least to this point in time, what's your assessment on what Chan Gailey is trying to do with this team overall, since it's obviously a different head coach, different coaching staff from a year ago?
Well, I think, you know, he is an offensive specialist. That's been his calling card throughout his NFL career, and I think for that reason it was a good hire. The Bills have struggled offensively for the most part of the last decade, really.
Yeah.
And Gailey, I think, is trying to build kind of a basic ground game with, you know, three pretty good running backs. They haven't been able to get it going in the first 2 weeks yet because, you know, they're not playing well. But I think his philosophy is to run the ball and be able to pass effectively, if not often, and that's the direction they're headed in. The offense has been such a mess through the first 2 weeks that, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to say they had adopted any of those characteristics, or, you know, you'd struggle to find out what their offensive identity was for the first couple of weeks because they just can't do anything. And really, most of these issues deal with personnel. You know, they really don't have a very good, capable offensive line, particularly at the tackle spots. They're pretty talented inside guard, and the center's okay. But it's personnel. It's offensive line, I think. It's lack of a good wide receiver to play opposite Lee Evans, I think, is an issue for them. And then, you know, they switch quarterbacks. Obviously, they don't feel like they found the answer at quarterback yet.
Well, I guess they're going to try to at least learn at least part of that equation this weekend. You mentioned the running backs, John, and you know, obviously you've got Marshawn Lynch and a lot of people like Jackson as well. C.J. Spiller, first-round draft choice, has only had 8 carries for, what, 9 yards, I think, in the first couple of weeks. Do you anticipate him still being sort of worked slowly into this equation? And at what point do you think the Bills say, you know, hey, we drafted him for a reason, that he's got to be the future for us at running back. We're just going to give him the ball.
Yeah, I think they'd like to give him the ball now. He started the opener, you know, the opening game against Miami, and then he did not start last week. I think they've been so inept offensively and have failed so often to stay in the field. I mean, their third down conversion rate's like 25%. You know, they just don't run a whole lot of offensive plays, so that there's not enough carries for CJ or for the other guys, for that matter. I think in the back of his mind, Chan Gailey has a plan for those backs, and I think, you know, last week anyway against Green Bay, his plan was you know, start out with one package that lets Marshawn Lynch pound the ball between the tackles, start to work Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller in there. I think Spiller could be an effective third down back for the Bills. But, boy, they've had so few chances offensively and run so few offensive plays that none of those guys have been able to establish, you know, exactly what their role is yet.
Which to me is a little bit amazing, to be quite honest with you, because obviously I think, you know, personnel-wise, I think Lynch and Jackson are two pretty good backs. You had Spiller to the mix. I know that brought some questions up from a lot of people when he was selected in the draft. Who is the number one back? Who should be the number one back in your estimation, and does it really matter?
I think it matters. I don't know that I don't think they're going to approach it like one back is going to get you know, 75% of the carries. I think they want to incorporate two and possibly three of them in there. I think Spiller's has the most talent. He has not been unleashed yet because, as I said, they don't run enough offensive plays. I think Fred Jackson is a good workhorse back, and I think Marshawn has a role to play on, you know, short yardage and goal line type situations. But their lack of offensive production has meant that they just don't get enough chances for any of those three yet. But when it all sorts out, if they ever get the offense going, I think Spiller will emerge as the best of the three of them.
Is it more of, in your estimation, a game plan or play call issue, or is it just an execution issue, hence the move for the spark at trying to replace Edwards at quarterback with Fitzpatrick?
I think it's execution. I think they just have not, and again, it's not just quarterback execution. The offensive line has been very bad for 2 weeks. I think they've been unable to get any passing or running game going. And so, you know, and the receivers haven't played well. The quarterback hasn't played well. So, as I said, it's just maybe the quickest fix that Gailey could find was to put in an experienced guy to try to get things going that way, a guy with a little bit different approach the quarterback spot than Trent Edwards and see what comes out of this.
Let's switch it over then, John, to the defensive side of the football. And I know Posluszny's been hurt. What's his prognosis?
Well, he's not going to play this week. And let's see, he got hurt in the opener.
Right.
I think they said 4 weeks. It might be a couple of weeks down the road before he's ready to play. He sprained a knee in the season opener against Miami. So I'm looking, you know, maybe next week, but more likely a week or two down the road before Posluszny's ready to come back.
Well, in that instance, I know there's also been a little bit of a philosophical change in terms of the defensive lineup and looking at a 3-4 this year. I mean, has that been much of a struggle, or is that something you think comes a little bit more naturally to the way the Bills are suited personnel-wise?
They've got some, square pegs. They're trying to fit in round holes on defense. They had a pretty good defensive effort against the Dolphins in the opener, and then I think took some steps back last week against a really talented Green Bay offense. They've got some players who fit pretty well. They've got Kyle Williams, who is their a veteran defensive tackle who they've made into a nose tackle now. Probably not the prototypical nose tackle. He's a little bit undersized, but he plays so hard and plays so smart that I think they think he can make the change. So they got a rookie behind him, Terrell Troop, their second round pick from Central Florida, who I think is more of a prototypical nose tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Stroud, who's been an inside guy for most of his career, defensive tackle, I think he's done a really good job adapting to the defensive end spot. Lost about 20, 25 pounds, runs all over the field, makes some pretty good plays. Other guys are struggling. You know, Chris Kelce, a longtime veteran, I think is still adapting to being an outside linebacker now. He played defensive end for a long time. The back end of the defense is pretty solid. That probably is the strength of the team with the experience and the production of the corners and the safeties, although they've yet to take the ball away once yet. They had their second in the NFL with interceptions last year, and they don't have any so far in the first couple of games. But I think the back end of the defense is pretty solid.
Is that largely due to a lack of pressure being put on the quarterback, do you think, at least initially?
Yeah, initially, yeah. And, both the Packers in particular didn't have to throw it up too much because they were playing from ahead, so there haven't been a lot of balls thrown their way yet.
Okay. Well, John Murphy, again, the play-by-play voice for the Buffalo Bills, joining us here on Patriots Playbook. Do you get the sense that anybody other than the fans and maybe some of the media outside of Buffalo, or let's say inside Buffalo, will grow terribly frustrated if this 0-2 start decides to mushroom a little bit larger? What is the commitment to Chan Gailey and or his staff here in your estimation?
Well, I think it's pretty strong. There's a new general manager as well as a new head coach, Chan Gailey. Buddy Nix was hired last New Year's Eve,
mm-hmm.
a longtime football guy, a longtime scout. He spent an entire life in the NFL, or in football anyway, and Buddy's committed. I think they view this as the early stages of a building process, and I think between Nix and Chan Gailey that they are probably pointed in the right direction. I think they are pointed in the right direction. They just need to plug some holes with personnel. It's probably more than a one-year process. Once they get some more offensive linemen in here to decide on the quarterback, add some more spots to the defense, then I think they'll be okay. But, there's definitely a commitment to Gailey and Buddy Nix, and I hope it's long-term. That's the one thing that's been the biggest problem over the decade of futility with the Buffalo Bills has been instability. You know, they've gone through, what's the count? I think they're up to 5 general managers and coaches over the last 10 years or so. I mean,
yeah.
You can't keep changing every other year.
Yeah, that obviously doesn't lend itself to anything. You know, the Patriots are obviously struggling, John, a little bit trying to morph themselves from a team that is a little bit more of a veteran presence to a youthful team. And certainly I think we've already seen, at least through the first couple of weeks of the season, that youth and inexperience doesn't always turn out to be what you need in this league, especially on the defensive side of the ball for the Pats. And obviously that's something I think that the Bills have had some experience with over the last few years. It has not gone well for them. Looking back at where the Bills have come from, what should have been changed in your estimation? Is there anything at all in hindsight?
You mean how far back you want to go?
Well, yeah. You
know what I mean? They've had a tough decade. You know, the 2000 season was the last season for Wade Phillips, who left here with a pretty good record. He was 29-19 as the head coach. He was preceded out the door by John Butler, who was general manager, went on to San Diego and had some success there before tragically passing away. They had a pretty good group, I think, with Butler and Wade Phillips, and then Butler left, and then Wade Phillips left, and then they had Tom Donahoe came in and hired two coaches in his tenure, Greg Williams and Mike Mularkey, and then Marv Levy came in and hired Dick Geron. I mean, it's just it's been a revolving door. I just don't think that's the recipe for success in the NFL. You know, you need a program, you need a organizational philosophy, which many teams, including I believe the Patriots, have. And when you continue to change directions every 2.5-3 years, it just it creates the sort of problems that the Bills are facing now.
Well, especially in light of the fact that, you know, the AFC East continues to be a very, very difficult division in which to compete in. The Jets, for obvious reasons, have improved. The Dolphins may very well end up being the best team in this division this year. Patriots are still trying to hang on and, like I said, sort of reinvent themselves. Does that add to the sense of frustration in Buffalo?
Yeah, to see the success the Patriots have had. I mean, the frustration of not being able to beat the Patriots in 13 tries, I think. And I think frustration is the key word, too, on the part of the fans. And now even with this year's Buffalo Bills, you know, and the way that they can't move the ball offensively has contributed to the sense of frustration. The good news is, I believe, this season is still very young. You know, we're only 2 games into it.
Right.
I don't think the Bills are going to play that badly throughout the entire 16-game season, the way they played in the first 2 games. I think they'll get better, and I think they'll be a better team by the end of the season than they are right now.
John, give us a surprise, personnel-wise, on this team, somebody that's pleasantly surprised you, maybe even surprised this coaching staff that perhaps fans in New England wouldn't be familiar with yet.
Oh, boy, that's a good question. I mean, one guy who played great last year was the rookie safety, Jairus Byrd,
yeah,
who came up with 9 interceptions. And, you know, he wasn't a highly touted draft pick when he came out of Oregon, the second rounder, but he really had a great year, and it's got a after struggling with some injury issues and surgery actually during preseason, I can see him picking up where he left off. Did not start against the Dolphins, but started against Green Bay and looks real comfortable back there. I think he's just a solid pro. You know, he's got good bloodlines. His father, Gil Byrd, played in the NFL for,
right,
for several years and is a coach with the Chicago Bears now, I believe. I think Jairus Byrd is like could be a rising star in the NFL.
9 picks is going to get your attention.
Yeah. The guards are good. You know, the second year now guards, Eric Wood, late first round pick 2 years ago, and Andy Levitre. I mean, you can see, that's what I talked about. I mentioned how I think they're pointing in the right direction. There are some young building blocks, I think, on this roster, guys they can build around. Spiller is going to be a good player. There's no question, if you saw him in preseason, that he's got ability and is always one of the most dynamic players whenever he steps on the field. They just got to fix some of the things around him so he can sort of showcase his talent. So I do think there are some foundational pieces in place for the Bills to build on in the years ahead.
John, finally here, how do you quantify what is in place now in Buffalo in terms of success for this season? Do you do it in wins and losses? Is that the ultimate bottom line? Or do you feel like the Bills as an organization, as a coaching staff, what have you, aren't so much looking at wins and losses as they are maybe, you know, are we moving in the kind of direction that we're comfortable with?
Well, I think you always have to deal with wins and losses in the NFL. I mean, it's just the fact of life. I think it's what the league is built on, you know. And it's easy. I don't think anyone will be happy. You know, Bills won 6 last year. They won 7 in each of the 3 years that preceded it. You know, if they don't get to that level again, it'll be a step back. There's no question about it. And it's okay for me to say, you know, they're pointed in the right direction. And it's okay for Buddy Nix and Chan Gailey to believe that they're pointed in the right direction. But it is the ultimate bottom line business. You need wins, you know. It'll be tough to take if they don't win 6 or 7 games this year. It'll be a tough pill to swallow for the fans. But and that may be the case when it's all said and done. I hope it's not, but that'll be viewed as a step back for the organization, even if they do have some of those pieces in place.
Is there a particular matchup that you're looking forward to watching this Sunday?
Well, it's always a challenge for the Bills always to handle Vince Wilfork, and I know probably every team that goes up against the Patriots feels that way. I was talking to Jeff Hangartner about it yesterday, the Bills center, and I think he views it as his ultimate challenge twice a year to try to find a way to deal with Wilfork, who can be so disruptive in the run game. And I actually, watching the Jets game, saw him line up as a defensive end a couple times, which creates a whole other set of problems. I think he is the key matchup. You know, I see all these new faces on the Patriots defense and then all these younger players who are trying to find their roles on the defense, and yet it always comes back to Wilfork, I think, is the key matchup for the Bills. Hangartner and the guards against Wilfork.
Okay. Very good. John Murphy again, the radio voice of the Buffalo Bills, joining us here on Patriots Playbook. John, thanks for spending some time with us this afternoon. Safe travels here to New England, and we'll pop in on you on Sunday.
Yeah, come on by and say hello.
We'll do that. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, there you go, John Murphy. And I got to tell you, first of all, the guy's very, very eloquent. He really knows his stuff for obvious reasons. He's got great answers. He's rapid fire with his answers. You know, a lot of people look at a play-by-play voice of a football team as sort of a mouthpiece for the team, almost in a public relations sense. Although, you know, in the truest sense, a play-by-play guy is supposed to be a journalist, but in a lot of instances, he's a team journalist, looking at it from a team perspective, I guess largely depending upon who really pays the salary in this instance. But putting all of that aside, he knows the team, he knows the stuff, he knows the background, he knows the personnel as well as anybody, and certainly didn't sound to me like he was going to try to mask any of his opinions one way or the other when it comes to trying to basically be available to answer some of the tough questions. And there are a lot of tough questions that will need to be answered, and asked and answered about the Buffalo Bills coming up for, you know, this season, especially if the struggles on the football field continue. I mean, they're 0-2 as it now stands. Certainly look as if they could potentially go a little bit further than that without a win before they get that far. The Patriots certainly hope to put him at 0-3 this Sunday, and that is, of course, of the immediate concern to Patriots fans everywhere. We appreciate John for hanging around and being a part of us, part of our program today. All right, let's pause here for a timeout, and then we'll get back into our regular studio. Eric Scalavino from PFW is here as well. We'll chat about certainly look into the some of the matchups with the Bills coming up on Sunday. Hour number two inside Patriots Playbook today will, of course, feature Russell Baxter from ESPN. If you've got some questions for Russell, a particular game matchup that you're looking at, could be about the Pats and the Bills, absolutely, or another game in the NFL, and you want to fire that off, we'll ask it of him today. webradio@patriots.com, the email address, webradio@patriots.com, and of course the ACE ticket hotline, 508-543-7482, if you want to call in and participate on the show. And once we get into the computer here, we'll open up the Facebook page. We'll take your chat messages and your chat questions as well. So a good start to Patriots Playbook for Thursday, and we continue with more in just a couple of moments.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Yeah, don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in a shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
Wow. You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You got?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America NA, member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello? So, Pat, what time does our flight get in? It
says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook for a Thursday. Pats and the Bills coming up on Sunday. Again, thanks to John Murphy, the radio voice of the Buffalo Bills, for opening up the program today to give his thoughts on this 2010 version of the Bills and certainly the struggle that it has been, at least, I think, thus far for Buffalo. Eric Scalavino from PFW back in studio with us. And
Howdy.
Howdy. Anything from practice today that we can... surmise?
Yeah,
anything we should be concerned about or anything?
Not really concerned about, no. I mean... The same two players who haven't been around weren't around again today.
Right.
Wheatley, Kazier, nothing really new there. We did see in the locker room before practice a couple of appearances by IR guys, Lee Bodden and Brandon McGowan.
Okay.
Didn't talk really to the media, you know, officially. They, you know, said hello to a couple of people, but not really in any formal capacity. But otherwise, just very businesslike. With their preparations for the Bills, it seems like full pads again outside up on the dual training camp fields up there behind Gillette, and you know, just really
business as usual.
No news, yeah. I think, is good news, John.
Yeah.
At this point,
that's probably, you know, I think that's probably is about all you can hope for at this stage. I mean, everybody knows that, and we've talked about it. Last week was a disappointment. Hmm. It's time to turn the page. That's sort of been the theme of the week around Gillette Stadium. Turn the page. Let's move on. Let's get to Buffalo. Let's get that one. Let's get to 2-1. Mm-hmm. And then that way we can get to Miami next week. But at the same time, you don't want to turn the page and skim over Buffalo. And partly what I was trying to go with in line of questioning there with John Murphy a little while ago is just to kind of get his sense of, you know, the level of frustration. And certainly there's a great level of frustration amongst the fandom of Buffalo.
Rightly so.
They have changed not only head coach, but they've changed general managers in Buffalo.
And now after 2 weeks.
And you're 0-2. And you have any
quarterbacks.
And now you're changing quarterbacks. So, I mean, I'm kind of, the question I had asked was, you know, how committed are they to letting Chan Gailey try to put his system in? And, you know, if they go to, if this 0-2 start grows to say like 0-6 or worse, which it could conceivably, do you pull the plug on it again? His answer to what that, the paraphrase was, well, you hope not, because that's been the problem over the last decade already anyways. They get going one direction and they end up changing direction all the way.
Well,
but at the same time, how do you balance the need for changing something that's standing right in front of you?
I shouldn't say nobody, very few people have patience anymore in today's world.
Right, that's the truth.
I mean, look how many teams have switched quarterbacks after two games. The Eagles, the Bills, the Raiders. Granted, you know, the Raiders have had their struggles over the years with quarterbacks, but two games, and people are already looking to make a change. A guy like Chan Gailey, we know he's not really probably going to be the future of Bills coaching, but nobody wants to let things take and run their course anymore. It takes time. Remember the old, in the old days, and I say that 15, 20 years ago, conventional wisdom was it takes 3 to 5 years for a coach to get his system fully implemented with the types of players that he wants. Nobody gets 3 to 5 years anymore.
No, because there's too much pressure to win now. The way that, you know, teams bounce back from, you know, losing seasons to, you know, turning around the next year. And I think a lot of it has to do with free agency. A lot of it has to do with, you know, the rosters. A lot of it has to do with the salary caps, because teams can't stack their rosters any longer to keep other teams from improving themselves. There's always going to be quality players available. So when you get into a rut, like Buffalo is clearly in a rut, and obviously Patriots fans hope that that rut continues at least for one more week, which is another thing I know that's a source of frustration in Buffalo, having lost the 13 like they have to the Patriots. But at the same time, there's got to be an underlying reason behind Buffalo's ineptitude over the course of the last decade. Now, I know that's their problem. It's not our problem. Our problem here is trying to maintain a level of excellence. And that in and of itself is hard to do. We talked about that on yesterday's program, that it's almost impossible to do in this day and age because rosters can change over so frequently now in this day and age of free agency and salary cap issues. Mm-hmm. That, you know, there's just too many good guys who are looking to get good deals one team can't stockpile anymore. Why then do teams like Buffalo and San Francisco, Cleveland, you can still say, well, you know what, that franchise is still an expansion franchise, so I think you can excuse them to an extent. To an extent.
1999, they came back in the league.
Okay, so it's been a decade. It's been a decade now, but you can still understand that they've had it a little bit more difficult than, say, maybe a Buffalo or even a San Francisco to that reason. Jacksonville would be another team you could throw in there that just kind of muddled along, really hadn't improved itself. I mean, why do these teams continue to mire themselves in mediocrity? How are they not able to pull themselves up and become competitive in a 2 or 3 year span?
Because I think that there is this lack of patience. I think it's a catch-22. There's such a desire to win that they feel like they have to push panic buttons and make all these moves, reactionary moves to one or two losses or three-game losing streaks or a rash of injuries, whatever it may be. And you don't give yourself enough time to develop. You know, it's like planting a garden. You don't throw the seeds in and expect the crops to be out the next morning. You have to wait and give it time. These things need time to generate. And people don't have the patience for that anymore. Owners don't have it. GMs don't. Head coaches don't have it. It's the culture of our society today. And I think it is contributing to the mediocrity that we're seeing in a lot of these teams, as you mentioned.
All right, there's a couple of other things that I wanted to run by you here, if you don't mind me doing that. And it kind of, I thought about it coming into the day today, and then there's an email here that's sitting in the inbox that reminded me of it, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this because this is something that happened last week with the Buffalo Bills, so it's pertinent this week because we're talking about the Bills. But this email comes from Andrew, or I should say Sandro, in the Ukraine. And he says, I was wondering if you've kept up on the CBA talk. Mike Florio from ProFootballTalk.com on NBC Sports keeps reporting about teams voting to decertify the union.
Yeah.
The Bills voted to decertify the union last week.
Yep.
They become now the seventh team in the NFL that have voted to decertify the union. The Patriots have not yet gotten to that point. Sandro asks, if they do that, how do the players negotiate without a union? Who does this give the advantage to in negotiating? Does this mean an arbitrator or judge will step in and screw up the NFL?
Well, I think the reason, from what I've read about this issue, the reason why players' representatives are predicting that there's going to be a league-wide 32-team unanimous vote to decertify would be as a bargaining chip. Right now, as a union, the way the laws are written, the unions can't sue for damages or rights or certain things. If they were decertified, the players collectively would be able to sue the NFL for
locking them out.
Yeah, and that kind of thing. So they sort of have to cut off their nose to
despite their
face.
Yeah. Okay.
In this regard, I believe, though, once whatever lawsuit was settled or a verdict was rendered, they would have to take the steps of recertifying a union in order to negotiate.
So really, this is sort of a fait accompli, that this is most definitely going to happen, and it most definitely...
It looks like the dominoes are falling that way, yeah.
They're beginning to fall. Every team, by the way, all seven teams that have voted to decertify the union at this point have all voted unanimously to do so.
Mm.
So my guess is that there'll be very few that won't vote to do that because, yes, as you suggested, it'll give the players an individual right to, you know, sue if they choose to do so. Can't help but think that might create some ill will, especially when it comes to bargaining. But hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do. I guess.
Well, both sides have.
It's a bargaining ploy, is what it is.
Yes. Right.
Frankly, the way that I look at it and the way that I understand it, from a fan's perspective, is this a good thing or is this a bad thing? Because let's cut to the chase here, right? I mean, fans don't really care about some of the particulars in the CBA.
They want to know, is there going to be football?
Are we going to play football in 2011?
Exactly. Right.
And what they do in 2010, is that going to affect their ability to play football in 2011?
Yeah.
My take on this is, and you can certainly disagree if you don't see it,
My take on this is that if everybody, if the players vote to decertify, we're actually a little closer to playing than we are not playing.
That's a tough call, John, because on the one hand, they're taking this drastic move, which kind of implies that they're settling in on their spot.
They're expecting the owners to lock out.
Right.
So what they're trying to do, and this is why I think they're closer to playing than not playing, because what they're doing is they're trying to force the owner's hand. They're calling the bluff now in an effort to get this thing jump started now,
possibly,
before waiting until the CBA is up in March.
Possibly. My only concern is that I think both sides are entrenched in their positions at the moment.
But we're not getting any, there's no negotiating going on.
Right.
So that's why I'm thinking, well, the players then, at the very least, are stepping up. Here's how we're going to get these, you know, we're going to get the owners off their asses. We're going to decertify.
Right. But then if the owners turn around and call their bluff and say, we're not moving, sue us.
Okay.
Then things get ugly.
And I will allow that could happen. It's a double-edged sword here.
Right.
But at the same time, nothing is happening now. If we stay status quo
right
now,
it's,
nothing's happening.
I think in international politics, they would call this saber rattling.
Yeah. Saber rattling? I could see that.
They're coming to loggerheads.
Yeah.
And
got
most people know.
Got any other cliches you want to throw
in there? No, but I mean, that's really what it is. They're showing their tough guy attitudes.
They are at a virtual negotiating standstill.
Right. And it's a blinking contest now.
Right, correct. I agree with that. That's my perception anyway. So, and I brought this up again because the Bills last week voted to decertify. I don't know when this is going to come up to a vote with the Patriots. Can only surmise that it could be any time in the next week to, you know, 10, 12 weeks or
and
so.
And I think it's by design that the teams aren't doing it all at once. Because I think it's sort of an incremental process. They're saying they started out, it was like a drip in a faucet, and now it's going to become a torrent pretty soon. They're showing to the owners, look, we're ready to take that step. We'll decertify. How serious are we?
Yeah.
Okay, we were four teams. Now we're seven. Okay, now we're going to be 14 or 16 or however many it grows to be. You know, there could be a point when they reach a resolution or, you know, start negotiating and say, look, in good faith, stop the decertification and we'll negotiate with you in good faith. That's why I think they're doing it incrementally, just to see that they're slowly pushing that envelope towards the edge. They're not throwing it to the edge. They're slowly pushing it there. That's just the sense that I get from this.
The other thing I wanted to ask you is a little bit more in specifically about this team and where it stands after a couple of weeks. And, you know, we talked already that, you know, hey, if this team could get to 2-2 at the bye week, it's in decent shape. And for whatever reason, in your estimation, the loss of Kevin Faulk, how does that affect this team off the field in the locker room?
Not a whole lot off the field. Hurts them more on the field, obviously. I think on the in the locker room, Kevin Faulk's going to be around. He said so yesterday. I take him at his word. He's going to be in meetings. He's going to be there as a mentor. He said, you know, I was elected a captain. I have a service to perform for my teammates, so I'm going to fulfill it.
You brought up the fact already a couple of guys on IR were in the locker room today.
Yes. Right. It's not totally uncommon. We see that throughout the course of the season here and there. It's just sort of coincidental maybe that it happened the day after Faulk went out with his season-ending injury and announced it in the locker room. But yeah, I fully expect Kevin Faulk to be around and to help in whatever way he can, from a mental standpoint, from a, just from a psychological standpoint. Vince Wilfork, we talked to him today in the locker room, and he, one of Kevin Faulk's best friends on the team, and asked for his reaction, and he said, you know, the usual, Kevin's a great guy, great athlete, but, you know, we're going to miss him, but he's going to be around. He's still a part of this team, was the quote that Wilfork gave us. So, yeah, off the field, I don't think it's going to make a whole lot of difference. The one thing we won't see, according to Faulk himself, is Kevin Faulk on the sideline during a game, because
that can even be dangerous.
Well, but also, you know, a lot of people made a big deal about Tom Brady not being on the sideline
right
in 2008. Why isn't he there? Why isn't he helping Matt Cassel? Why isn't he showing his support? Kevin Faulk's not going to be there, so don't start with asking where Kevin Faulk is and why he's not on the sideline supporting his team. It's one of those things where, as an athlete, when you can't play, nothing hurts more than watching your team play and you're having to watch them. So a lot of players can't deal with that. A lot of players won't physically be there. They won't turn the television on. They can't do it. And it's I understand where they're coming from. And Falk said, I'm not going to be watching the games. I can't do it.
It's my quarterback.
But everything else during the week, preparation, film study, all that, he'll be around. It'll hurt them more on the field, John.
This email from Joel in Merrimack, New Hampshire says, Kevin's gone for the year. We don't have anyone really to replace him. Morris can do some things similar, but he always seems to get injured. I think Ben Jarvis can run well against some of the leaner defenses, but against defenses like Pittsburgh, I don't think he'll fare very well. I think we can beat the teams we're supposed to, but I can easily see this team this season going 9-7, or if certain games go wrong, we could actually be 8-8. I'm not on the ledge yet, but if we were to somehow cough up a duck against the Bills, I can see myself migrating to the window. And trust me, if we do somehow drop the Bills game, that ledge is going to be crowded. Now, having said that, we should not lose to the Bills. They are a horrible team. I watched a few minutes of that Green Bay game. It looked like they started mailing it in around the mid-second quarter. But unless the Pats start showing me more consistency, I'm going to be picking Miami in a couple of weeks. Do you guys think the Pats will try and pick up another running back during the season? That's the first one.
During the season?
During the season. I'd be surprised.
No, I don't.
I'd be very surprised.
I don't think so. I think they have enough running backs on the team right now, practice squad included, that they have enough bodies to take care of that.
Says, I could actually see the, he said, what do you think about the three-game stretch that starts with the Ravens and ends with Minnesota? I could actually see them losing all three. And how do things look if we go into Cleveland with a record of 3-4? It could happen.
Could happen, yeah. And it's that is a tough stretch. That middle stretch of the schedule is, I think, the toughest. Indianapolis, Baltimore, Minnesota, Pittsburgh, a lot of those games on the road. San Diego. I'll even include San
Diego.
Well,
it's Baltimore at San Diego, Minnesota in
right.
The 3 week stretch. That's,
yep.
That's difficult a stretch as you're going to find.
Tough. They could
all year long. They could lose all three.
At this point, it doesn't look good.
No, they could lose. So we're not even talking 3-4. We're talking it could be 2-5 if they lost all three.
Yeah, it's not looking good, John.
You know, the thing is that you're going to have to try to find a way to win the home games, and your home games are against Baltimore and Minnesota.
Crap.
We all know what Baltimore did last year here.
Yes.
You know, and I'm sure the week before that game we'll all be reliving that.
Yes.
You know?
We will.
That's a pretty good observation.
Thank you, Bill. But the only thing is that, you know,
when
the guy's done.
Here?
I don't know.
It's Miami week.
Is
next week.
No, that's right. Next week. The guys down the hallway will also be reliving it, and you can only hope that it has a positive effect on their performance.
But one step at a time, they do have to beat the Buffalo Bills, and I'm not taking that game for granted. I think they'll win. I have a score prediction for you today, John, which we'll get to when the time is right.
Okay.
But, I wouldn't take it for granted, even though I don't have much faith in the Bills as an organization
right now. Exactly. By the way, certainly on Thursdays, as part of our email question of the day, your score prediction and why you think the score will turn out the way you believe it will, webradio@patriots.com. And also chat us up on Facebook and send your score predictions in. This one comes from Derek, who says, what is this team going to do at running back? Just what we talked about. It is time for a new running back regime here in New England. Overhaul the position just at the tight end position was done. Draft one guy to be the guy. I want a workhorse every down back to tote the rock and help add balance to the offense as Brady ages. The benefits of a solid running back with this team would be astounding. Hopefully the team can get through the year, and then they can make the move this offseason.
Yeah, I'm a little ambivalent about the whole running game situation because they've gotten away with a committee for so long. They've, numbers-wise, John, had this equally productive outputs compared to what they would have if they had a lead back running and carrying the ball every play, virtually.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little, yes, I'd love to have a Corey Dillon-type player who can rush for 1,600 yards and 12 TDs or whatever, but we're not going to get one of those this year magically appearing. We'll have your best chance is to wait for next year, either the draft or free agency, whatever opportunities come up there. But this year they're going to have to rely on Fred Taylor as their lead back, I think, with Green Ellis spelling him. And I think Morris now is going to have to, at least for the short term, take over the third down role for Kevin Falk. And it's kind of amazing that we have a guy like Sammy Morris here who can be either a tailback, a fullback, or a third down back. And given his size, you're going to need that blocking presence in the backfield for Tom Brady on those obvious passing downs. So the answers aren't to be found this year, I don't think. They're going to have to make do with what they have in the running game.
All right, joining us on the Ace Ticket Hotline, Danny from Orlando. Danny, you're in the playbook. What's up today?
I'm in the playbook. What's going on, guys?
What's happening?
Hey. Not much. Actually, Eric was touching on it a little bit. I think Sammy Morris is pretty much, like, I think he's been underused and underrated the past few years. I mean, granted, he got hurt in 07, but I believe if he was healthy in 07, we would have had, you know, a balanced running game, you know, given how Maroney was performing. But obviously, Kevin Faulk being hurt, like, hurts us dramatically because I think he was the Colts killer, in my opinion, like, for the past few years, you know. That's based on your opinion, of course. But I don't know. I think if Sammy Morris is able to step in a role, and obviously we got the guy from the Jets. I forgot his name.
Danny Woodhead.
Woodhead, yeah. But, you know, I think if Sammy Morris is still able to run how he did a few years ago when we acquired him, I mean, obviously he's not like Kevin Faulk because, you know, he's a veteran, but I don't think it's that much of a step down, you know. And like Eric said, we just kind of have to, like, make do with what we have, you know. So I don't know what you guys think.
Well, I think, you know, your point about Morris in 07, he was banged up for much of the year. But actually, that was probably Lawrence Maroney's best season rushing the ball here. If you remember, he had four 100-yard games toward the end of the season. He was actually getting better as the season went on. And that was during the spell when Morris was hurt. And so I think their running game was as balanced as it could be with their passing
really
game at that
point. It
didn't
translate well in the playoffs, though, in my opinion. I mean,
well, that had more to do, I think, with defenses figuring out the offense by that point
like
in the year.
Sending everybody in the kitchen sink it. Right,
right. Right. So it was, you know, to blame it all on the running game, I think, might be a little bit unfair to them. But, yeah, you know, Morris, I think you're right, is a little bit underrated because he can do all of these things. Maybe not any one thing great, but he can do all of those things effectively.
He gets positive yardage every time. I mean, I always thought he was a better runner than Maroney, in my opinion.
It's just his like Fred Taylor and a lot of other players, they get banged up too much, and they get a reputation, and it's unfortunate, but
it's very difficult to get past that reputation once you get it.
Right.
It's really hard to change it. And
easy to get, hard to lose.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and also one quick question. Why didn't Fred Taylor run the ball more this past Sunday?
I don't think anybody has an answer for that, Danny. I mean, we've kind of asked and we never got a straight answer, and the only thing that I can surmise and what I talked a little bit about on Tuesday was we thought maybe the thought process was keeping fresh legs in there, and it was just not his turn in the rotation. But, see, I'm always of the opinion that if you got a guy who's got a little bit of a hot hand or got a little momentum going, you got to keep him in there. He's got to stay in there.
Yeah,
I don't care how old he is.
I think this is a trend we've kind of seen since 07, actually, that the team likes to run the ball early on in certain games, depending on, obviously, scheme and game plan against their opponent. But they give up on it too soon. They start getting in panic mode, and they start thinking, oh, they feel like the other team is starting to get a little bit of momentum, and they feel like they have to revert right back to Brady and his arm and throwing it all the time. I think that's just an inherent flaw in the system here. They panic too soon with that. Going back again, John, to our lack of patience thing. Running game equals patience. You have to know when to stick with it. Like the Bengals in week one, were down, 24-3. They continued to run the ball going into the second half. And they had those three long drives, and they all ended in scoring plays, touchdowns.
Yeah.
But they stuck with their running game. They threw the ball, sure, but they also stuck with their running game. They didn't completely abandon it and go away from their game plan, to their credit. And they almost came back if it weren't for a couple of fluke plays.
I agree. And given that how young the defense is, it's very important that they're able to feed off what the offense is doing, you know, just to gain a little bit of momentum. And, with that kind of play calling and the way how Aaron Hernandez was catching the ball, I mean, I'm a Florida State fan, and I know what he did to us for the past few years, so I knew he was going to be good. So.
Well, but Danny, here's the thing to consider. The offense has given the defense leads in the first two games. That should have been enough for the defense to play off of. As young as they are.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But, like, we didn't respond very well I don't know, I guess because going back to the whole, well, Cromartie's on, Revis is gone, let's go to Moss, go to Moss. But, you know, that's to anybody's opinion. It could be different tales, but
They only threw to him four times in the second half, you know.
Actually, no, I did look at that. They threw it to him more times in the first half than
exactly.
the second half. So.
Exactly.
It's, yeah. But,
and besides, I don't fault them for throwing the ball to Moss when the Jets' number one corner goes out of the game.
Yeah,
he stepped up, sure, but he's not their number one corner. If you get that mismatch, you have to throw the ball to your best receiver. And they didn't do it enough, if you ask me. I don't think they were forcing the ball to him. I don't think they went to him enough.
Yeah, is Wes Welker okay, too? Because I don't...
He's fine.
He is? Okay, all right,
yeah.
Just checking.
You're talking about the hit to the head?
Yeah, I was just wondering.
By the way, how come we haven't heard anything this week about Smith and potentially a fine or anything? Shouldn't that have happened by now?
Yeah, I think usually by Wednesday the league makes that decision and then by Tuesday I think they make that decision and then alert the player involved on Wednesday.
And we still haven't heard anything.
I don't think I've...
So that tells me they're not going to do anything.
Probably not. It usually doesn't go more than a week.
See, that's a crime. That's an absolute crime.
Well, I'd be more upset if they didn't flag him. I'd be more upset if they didn't get a flag during the game for it. At least they got the flag out of it, so the refs kind of, you know, saw what was going on there.
Well, you know, the problem is...
Well, if Ray Lewis gets in trouble for tripping the way that happened, then, well, I don't know, it's different. I mean, I thought the calls were kind of like different games and different calling situations. The officiating's been weird this year, in my opinion, but I don't know.
Little inconsistent, I think, to start the year. Maybe it's just working into their own sort of preseason shape.
Cool. All right, guys, well, I got to head out.
Thanks, Danny.
Thanks.
All right, you got it, buddy. Danny on the... Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482, if you want to join us. Anthony, North Carolina, you guys were talking about Brady and some of his inconsistency in the last show. He says, if Brady is the inconsistent one on the Pats offense and has been going back to last year, how much do you think the knee injury plays into that? Maybe not as physical limitations as much as mental. What are your thoughts?
I don't think it's a factor at all. I really don't. He doesn't look any different to me than he did before his injury.
I don't think so either, although I have to admit, second half against the Jets this last week was, I mean, he was pretty good in the first half, and he was pretty rotten in the second half. That was a pretty shocking one-half turnaround.
I don't know if this has anything at all to do with it, but I have not seen Tom Brady, with rare exceptions, the Buffalo game last year in the opener when he had the fourth quarter comeback with Benjamin Watson. Since Super Bowl 42, he has not been the same player. During and since that game, he has not been the Tom Brady that I remember.
Is that just because he got, you know, basically slaughtered that day by the Giants, defensive front four?
Again, I don't know if there's any direct correlation between the two, but that game, I had never seen him like that. Mr. Droopy, Pouty, the whole game, he was like that, if you recall. And ever since then, he hasn't seemed to be the same player. To me, I don't know why. I really don't. But that's just in my memory when I remember the turning point being, and it just hasn't been the same.
Well, that was the turning point for a lot of people, Eric.
I know.
You could obviously say that was the beginning of a little bit of a downward swing of the franchise fate.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm writing my commentary for this next issue about the theme being the hangover. They have a hangover in games where they start early and then they pay for it later. They have had a hangover since last season where they haven't been able to finish strong on the road. And from a fan's perspective, at least, there's been a hangover since Super Bowl 42. It's been hard to get over that game. The franchise seems to be in hangover mode right now.
Mm-hmm. Let me sneak one more in here for you. Ross
sure.
from Glasgow says, wondered what the team's vibes were regarding Ron Brace now. Talked about him in the offseason, that there was an organizational distaste for him, perhaps in the offseason. Seeing him against the Jets, I thought he was solid against the run. He seems to be building on his game reps from the first game. What is Team PFW view on him, and have you picked up any more vibes about him?
Well, certainly the fact that he's started the first two games, I think, is a positive development, especially since he missed so much of training camp with an injury and was able to make up that time and all that ground in order to get to this point. Says a lot about him and his character, I think, as a player, especially after the somewhat disappointing rookie year that he had and losing time a lot to Myron Pryor last season.
Yeah.
I think it, you know, the jury is still out, I think, but I think they're starting to come to some conclusions, and I think that it's in Brace's favor at this point. Need to see a little bit more, but glad to see that he's at least appearing to turn the corner.
Move that proper direction.
Yep.
Exactly. All right, before we let you get out of here, let me get your thoughts then on the game this Sunday and your prediction and why.
Okay, it's a 14-point spread, I believe.
Yes, it is.
So I picked them to win the game. I think they'll win by 10 points, though, so they won't cover. It'll be a 31-21 final score. And it's going to be a back and forth a little bit, John. I think it's going to be a tight game. New England will jump out to a lead, hold on to it, but the Bills will be nipping at their heels for most of the game. And at the very end, New England will put it away and win with a seemingly comfortable 10-point margin.
31-21?
31-21. Okay. And Fitzpatrick will have himself a pretty decent game, the quarterback for the Bills.
You know, I looked at the numbers from last year. He threw for just under 200 yards. I think he was like 17 to 25, throwing the football, had one touchdown, one pick. So he wasn't horrible.
No.
Obviously, he was, you know, in Buffalo, but nevertheless, he was certainly representative.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So.
Yeah, and I think he's going to help them. He's going to give them enough of a boost. C.J. Spiller is due for a productive game.
That's what worries me the most.
And especially if he gets uncorked, watch out. Watch out. I mean, I don't have any faith that the Bills' defense will be able to stop what New England's going to do on offense, which is why I think they'll put the 31 points up. But there's still some uncertainty about Spiller and, you know, Fitzpatrick making his first start this year. But I think that'll keep them competitive. So it'll be a tight one. But New England pulls it out.
Yeah, and moves to 2-1.
Moves to 2-1.
Very good. All right, Eric. Thanks, buddy.
All right.
We'll see you on Sunday.
Yes, we will. What's your score, by the way? You're gonna hold out?
You want me to give it now?
No, you always do it at the end, don't you?
I don't want to break tradition. Okay, all right. I usually do. Let's just put it this way. I'm lining up toward the way you're thinking.
Okay, good.
Unless the guy that I have on the phone here makes me think otherwise. All right. Welcome onto the program as we get into hour number two of Patriots Playbook for this Thursday. ESPN's Russell Baxter. Russell, how are you today?
I'm doing terrific, John. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Trying to pick up the pieces, I think, from last Sunday. I know you weren't terribly surprised over the result last Sunday in terms of the overall wins and losses. What about in the way that the game unfolded and the way that the Jets had such a big second-half push on offense?
Well, Listen, when we talked last week and so on, we talked about matchups and so on. And, you know, once it was surprising because, dare I say, once Darrell Revis pulled up lame at the end of the second quarter on the, you know, great one-handed grab by Randy Moss in the end zone, it, for lack of a better word, seemed to be the tonic the Jets needed. Mm-hmm. The game kind of turned at halftime. And I wouldn't say that's been a surprise for New England the last year and change, and I'll get to that in a second. But I was sorry, the tone of the game changed suddenly in the second half. And, you know, the turnovers came, the Jets got a little more aggressive with their play, and I thought that was the problem against Baltimore. I could not understand, with a secondary that's ravaged by injuries, and in the case of the Ravens, you know, Dominique Foxworth out, Ed Reed out, that the Jets did not challenge the Ravens secondary more. And I think if they would have, you know, shown the aggressiveness with the passing game that they did against the Patriots in the second half, more than likely I think they would have beaten Baltimore, but, you know, what they say about if,
yeah,
that's a whole different story. But, you know, it comes down to matchups a lot of times, and, you know, some of the Jet key components like LaDainian Tomlinson, who, you know, had some good burst in the game and so on, kind of changed the tone of the game. You know, the Brady interception to Cromartie, which was, you know, he just simply overthrew Randy Moss on the play, threw it right into Cromartie's hand. And then, you know, you really kind of felt it swing on that tipped interception that Brodney Poole got.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, suddenly sack on Brady, fumble. Well, you know, it when it went bad, it didn't go horrific for the Patriots, but when it bad, it just seemed to pile up. And, you know, there you go. And the second half, like I said, has been a little bit of a problem. I don't know what you put into this with the Patriots, John, but I did a little digging and it goes back to last year. The Patriots' last 18 games, which means the regular season last year in these two games.
Right.
In the first half of games, the Patriots have scored 320 points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's pretty respectable total in 18 games. In the second half of those same games, and including overtime, which was that Denver loss, they scored 159.
Right.
Which is half of what they're doing in the first half. Now, I'm not saying you've got to go and score 320 and 320, but there seems to be a drought. Now, the Jets game, they scored 14 and then were shut out in the second half. In the Bengals game, they scored 24. They had the kickoff return to start the third quarter, and then they scored one touchdown after that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a trend that you saw kind of last year, and it's, you know, at least in two games in, which is not much of a trend, but two games in, it seems to be the case this year as well.
So, obviously, there's something going on in that locker room where adjustments are being made, and yet you're kind of forgetting to do what you need to do to finish a game.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure how exactly you put, you know, where to put it on, and it, you know, is it in the second half that maybe some of the deficiencies in their lines show up? That wasn't really the case last year. They were pretty solid with their line play last year. I mean, they didn't have Richard Seymour last year. We know that because they had already made the trade, but you had Vince Wilfork and Ty Warren was there and so on. And their offensive line for the most part was intact last year, but, I'm not sure. Was it a lack of creativity? I don't know. A lack of aggressiveness in the second half? I wouldn't say that. They've been a team that has really kind of spread it out for the last couple of years. I don't want to say they've totally abandoned the run, but, you know, they are a passing team now primarily. The team that emphasizes, like I said, spreading the field and so on. You know, for whatever reason, maybe it's just teams are doing a better job adjusting in the second half. You know, I made this point to some people earlier in the week, and you know, again, you're much closer to the Patriots than I am and so on, but one thing I always marveled at when they won their three Super Bowls in 4 years, if you really look back at the three teams, they were all different teams. You know, there have been, you know, dynasties that we've seen. The Cowboys win in 3 and 4 years, the Steelers win in 4 and 6 years, the Niners who were, you know, just won, you know, and dropped the Super Bowl in every time, and a lot of those teams, especially Dallas and Pittsburgh, you knew what you were going to get from them, especially on the offensive side of the ball. The first Patriots team, people forget, and I know I've said this to you 57 times, their offense scored 3 touchdowns in 3 playoff games, and they won with defense and special teams. The second team was a little more balanced, the 2003 championship team, and then 2004, which I thought was clearly their best team. Offense, defense, pounding running game with Corey Dillon, mature Tom Brady. I mean, that team was hard to beat, and we saw why. This offense that they've had now, since 2007, for the most part has really been the same offense for now going on 4 years. It's not a different offense. It's not, we have Randy Moss and we have Wes Welker, we have Tom Brady, and of course Brady I know got hurt in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
But I just wonder if teams have now had many years to adjust to what the Patriots are doing. I'm not saying they can stop it all the time, but the bumps in the road are a little more frequent than they have been in the past.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, that's just one man's theory and so on. But
no, I think it's a good one.
Find it interesting that they were an ever-changing team earlier in the decade, and now these last 4 years, they've pretty much been their offense has kind of remained the same.
Right. And teams have caught up to them. You know, the stat that really hangs out to me and should hang out to a lot of people is, you know, Kevin Collins, our producer here, just kind of sent this one over to me. When leading at halftime from 2002 to 2008, the Patriots 66-1, which led the NFL. In 2009 and 2010, the Patriots are 9-5 leading at halftime. That's 24th best in the NFL.
And I believe they, if I remember right, they had a streak for a long time, going back a few years, where they were the team to score first,
yep,
if I remember
yep,
right.
Yep.
And they got actually ended on a dreary afternoon against the 49ers up in Foxborough in a game that didn't mean all that much, and I think the Patriots wound up winning their third Super Bowl that year anyway, if I remember right. But, yeah, there's just a little different feel there for whatever. And you know what's funny is this is how the league is, okay? We call this a copycat league, and to a degree that's true, but we don't always copycat the team that wins the championship. You know, when the Patriots lost the Super Bowl to the Giants, my firm believing that more teams went out to see what the Patriots did offensively and how to defense it than they did what they did the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing when Randy Moss came in the league in 98 with the Vikings, and they scored their 556 points. Everybody went to homework on the Vikings. I don't think a lot of people went to homework on the Broncos, even though they were the two-time Super Bowl champions who were just about to lose John Elway. When you see something that is so dominant, in 2000, when the Ravens defense was unstoppable, more teams probably went did their homework on the Ravens defense. Now, they did win a Super Bowl. I do understand that, but I don't think it's always the case. I think it's when somebody comes out with a novelty, for lack of a better word, and surprises us all, and it's so absolutely outstanding. You know, who knows? Maybe every team this offseason went to school on Chris Johnson, for all I know.
Yeah, maybe so.
Certainly the Steelers did last week, but, you know, the week before, the Raiders didn't. So that's how the league is. You know, you see something that is outstanding, and you got to either want to be part of it, or you got to find a way to stop it.
Right, absolutely. Russ, I'm kind of looking at the schedule this week and kind of along the lines of what I've seen some on ESPN over the course of the last few days and what I've heard talked about and what I've read about. I wondered if you'd play a little game with me today.
Sure. Is it going to involve Michael Vick?
No. Well, it could in a sense.
I was just curious because I've been hearing a lot about Michael Vick all over football these days, and I'm curious what the other 15 games are going
to
be like.
Yeah, so. Well, that's true, and we could get to that, but really all I wanted to do today was I wanted to play contender or pretender.
Okay.
And I want to take a look at the teams that are 2-0. And I want to take a look at the teams that are 0-2, and let's see if we can't figure out whether or not, you know, hey, 2-0 is legit or 2-0 is just, you know, sort of a false front.
Okay.
So first of all, the teams that are 2-0, contender or pretender, Kansas City Chiefs.
I would say pretender, based on what I think my preseason predictions are going to be. I would say pretender, but improved.
Okay.
I don't think you beat the Chargers without being improved.
And they are at home against San Francisco this weekend, which means that there's every reasonable expectation they could be 3-0.
Yes, they could. Their defense, I think, is a little better. I don't think their run defense is that great. And if the Niners are going to do what we think they're going to do, I think they'll get a big dose of Frank Gore, who, listen, he had an outstanding game Monday night, safe to say. And I think the Niners will get off the schneid and hand Kansas City their first loss.
Okay. New Orleans Saints are 2-0. Contender, pretender?
Oh, contenders until dethroned. And but I've been hearing a lot this week, they don't look the same.
Yeah, I kind of thought the same thing, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and you know what? I understand they don't look the same, okay? But they are now a champion where you get everybody's best shot.
Right, right.
And Monday night they were ripe for the taking and still found a way to win that game. Okay, the Niners did come down and tie the game and so on, but they moved down the field and stole one on the road. I mean, they got outgained in the game and so on. Let's not forget that, you know, the Saints defense last year wasn't the steel curtain. They were the steel, STEAL,
yeah,
curtain,
yeah,
when it came to takeaways.
Yeah.
And they got four of them Monday night. Remember, they had 39 last week.
Sure, sure.
And they tacked on eight more in the playoffs. So they were ball hawks last year. If they can be ball hawks again on defense, because, like I said, Frank Gore had a big day night running and receiving against them. So, yes, contenders and gets thrown, and they're playing an Atlanta team that have beaten seven of the last eight times this week.
Correct. All right, Pittsburgh Steelers, 2-0. Contender, pretender?
Contender. That's almost as based as much on what kind of organization they are more than anything else. And the thing that's interesting is how many times did you hear in the offseason, if the Steelers can go 2-2 without Ben Roethlisberger, they'll be in the hunt. Well, I guess the next two games are gravy.
Yep.
In
yep.
terms of, because they are 2-0. And they're, you know, their defense with a healthy Aaron Smith and a healthy Troy Polamalu looked lights out last week. Their pursuit and relentless attacking of Chris Johnson. Chris Johnson didn't even have 100 yards from scrimmage last week, much less 100 yards rushing, which, of course, he had gone into that game with 12 straight 100-yard rushing games. They really bottled him up, and they really physically took it to the Tennessee Titans, which was a little surprising, to be honest with you.
A little bit surprising is that the Steelers are on the road against another 2-0 team this week in the Tampa Bay Bucks. Contender or pretender?
Well, I would have to say pretender again based on, but you go back to last year, they're now 4-1 in their last five games. Now, before you start nitpicking at their schedule, they did go into New Orleans late last year and beat the Saints. Now, I know it was the week after the Saints lost their first game, and if I remember right, the Saints jumped out to a 17-0 lead, and Tampa came all the way back and beat them in the Superdome. Those are the kind of games for a young program that might be jump-starting. Again, this year, Cleveland and Carolina. But again, they won on the road. They've done some nice things with Josh Freeman, and some of their young players, like rookie receiver Mike Williams, very, very interesting. I mean, he turned out to have been a very, very pleasant surprise in camp. I will say this. This is the third week in a row that Steelers defense gets a quarterback who has never seen them play defense before.
Mm.
I get the feeling that the Steelers will probably should go to 3-0, I should say. Although, they're down to another quarterback. Charlie Batch will start for Pittsburgh.
That is correct. Houston Texans are 2-0. Contender, pretender?
Well, based on my Super Bowl prediction.
Of the Houston Texans, I was just about to say.
I'm going with contender. They have now won two games two totally different ways. They dominated with the run game. And last week, the Redskins, who even when they were ahead, opted to throw the football. And I think that wound up costing Washington and so on. 17 carries for 18 yards for a Mike Shanahan team is very uncharacteristic. And when the Redskins need to punch it in late in the game last week, they couldn't do it. Houston's front four is playing well. Mario Williams has four sacks. They haven't seen a lot of running plays against them. I have a stat this week. 27 rush attempts, 100 pass plays against Houston's defense in two games. And again, that's one team that was behind and one team that was ahead. So whatever you make of that. And they're playing, of course, a Dallas team this week, who's the polar opposite on offense. 42 rushing plays, 100 pass plays. That being said, and Houston's my Super Bowl pick, but so is Dallas. I think Dallas is going to get off the schneid this
week. Yeah, you picked the old...
I picked the old Texas Stadium.
It's the I-45 Super Bowl.
My sole motivation was free meals in the state of Texas.
So you think the Cowboys actually get off the schneid this week?
Yes, I do, because... It's almost like it's set up. Houston whacked them in the preseason.
Yeah.
Dallas is down. Houston can't stop the pass. Dallas, all they do is pass. And that to me means it's a perfect opportunity for the Cowboys to unleash their three-headed monster against them. And if not now, when for the Dallas Cowboys? I just find it hard to believe they're going to fall to 0-3. If they do, I think all hell could break loose in the state of Texas.
Got three more 2-0 teams, and one of them, the Patriots, will play next week. The Miami Dolphins are 2-0 at home against the Jets Sunday night. Dolphins contenders or pretenders?
I think the Dolphins are contenders because, in my mind, I picked them to win the AFC East. They did sweep the Jets next year, and I think this is a tricky spot because I know a lot of people are going to jump all over Miami because Darrelle Revis is out.
Mm-hmm.
And of course all the Braylon Edwards controversy and so on. Be interesting to see how the Jets are affected. If the Jets are the quote unquote Super Bowl contender, a lot of people think they are, they need to go to Miami and play well. But based on my Super Bowl predictions / playoff predictions, I'm going to take Miami in this one because I think they will exercise some offensive patience, and I think the two guys they added in the offseason, two big ones, Brandon Marshall and Carlos Dansby, we're going to find out why the Dolphins made those acquisitions this offseason on Sunday night.
So you like the Dolphins?
I'm going to have. I don't love the Dolphins.
But you like
them. I like the Dolphins. I think they'll find it. Listen, they beat the Jets twice last year, once with that running game and the Wildcat offense,
and
once basically with Ted Ginn Jr. and Jason Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
They had about 100 yards of offense and still managed to score 30 points. And it'll also depend on how the Jets play it. Are we going to see the Mark Sanchez? And I don't mean him, per se. I mean the aggressive offensive style that the Jets showed in the second half against New England. Or are they going to pull in the reins and say, all right, we're going to let our defense win the game and Mark, don't screw it up. Okay. I think anytime you ask your quarterback to don't screw it up, is when your quarterback thinks about screwing it up.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't disagree with that. The Dolphins were my pick to win the division, so I'd have to go with the Dolphins as well, as terms of certainly being a contender. And then the other two 2-0 teams happen to be facing off against each other, lo and behold, on Monday Night Football on ESPN. Packers and the Bears, both 2-0. Are either of those teams pretenders? Maybe I'll put it that way.
Well, I still have to say that the Bears are little pretenders, but they do look better. And listen, Lance Briggs has been dynamite on defense. They look a little better defensively than they did last year. But, you know, they could also wind up having a lot of problems against a balanced Packer offense, who struggled a little in the first half against Buffalo and then pulled away. Aaron Rodgers hasn't been lights out so far, but he still has that added dimension of being able to run with the football. People forget that about Aaron Rodgers. They think he just sits back there and chucks it all over the place. And I'm going to give you a stat that includes the playoffs, John.
Okay.
Dating back to last year, which is 35 games for Aaron Rodgers, he has thrown 66 touchdown passes, only 23 interceptions, and he's run for 11 touchdowns.
That's a pretty good ratio right there, huh?
Yeah, that guy is a machine. Again, it's not all about the quarterback. Listen, Green Bay's defense has been getting a monster. Clay Matthews has 3 sacks in each of the first 2 games.
Yeah, you need to be very careful about mentioning that name amongst Patriots fans, because everybody is really up in arms over the fact that they could have had Clay Matthews here and decided to trade down instead.
Yeah, well, listen, as it turned out, he turned out to be an outstanding pick for them and so on. And listen, they haven't been great defensively so far. They've shown a little vulnerability to the run, but I don't think the Bears are a team that are going to necessarily try to pound it down your throat. And given the state of the Bears' offensive line, they're really not built to do that. They really need to depend on Jay Cutler and spreading the ball around. You know, one of the big question marks with the Bears this offseason was, how was their wide receiving core going to fit into the plans of Mike Martz? Well, here's one way. And again, this is only touchdown passes.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Cutler's thrown 5 touchdown passes in 2 games. 3 have been to Matt Forte, a running back. 1 has been to Greg Olsen, a tight end. And 1 of them has been to Devin Hester, a converted wide receiver from a couple of years ago. So if you were worried about their wide receiving core, don't worry. There are other people to throw the football to.
Okay, fair enough. Now, of the teams that are all 0-2, I'll sort of simplify this just a little bit by saying, right now you've got the 49ers, you've got the Lions, you've got the Vikings, you've got the Bills, you've got... the Browns, you've got the Panthers, and you've got the Rams and the Cowboys all at 0-2 going into games this weekend. Of those teams, of the 0-2 teams, are there any true contenders in your estimation? I think you've already alluded to the Cowboys you still think being a contender.
Yeah, I think the Cowboys are a contender. I think the 49ers are a playoff contender. I don't think they're a championship contender. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I think I still would like to see them. They're still the favorite to win the NFC West, because no one's obviously pulling away from there. And you know, for Dallas, you know, even though they're 0-2, everybody in the division already is 1-1 as well. So they're not necessarily 2 games behind.
I
think Dallas will find a way to get its act together. Again, that's my opinion, because based on what they are, they have to run the football. I don't care. Miles Austin got a lot of money in offseason. Dez Bryant got a big contract in offseason as a first-round pick. Just because you're paying certain guys certain money doesn't mean they have to get all the action. Miles Austin has caught 10 passes in each of the first 2 games. Dez Bryant's been a big part of their passing attack in the first 2 games. It's mystifying. Michael Vick, as the backup quarterback for the Eagles, 1 game backup, 1 start, has more rushing yards than the Dallas Cowboys as a team. That just can't be. Okay? It just can't be. You've got to show some balance. You've got to show the other team. And if you think your team has issues protecting the quarterback, then use some run. When they got into the playoffs last year, they pounded the Saints. They pounded the Redskins. They pounded the Eagles twice. Okay? I don't think Jason Garrett has forgotten that. So unless somebody else is now calling the plays and is the offensive coordinator, I'm mystified about the path of which they've taken. Okay, 100 pass plays in 2 games is a lot of pass plays for a team that lost by 6 and lost by 7. Okay, mm-hmm. The Dallas Cowboys are playing football right now like they're losing games, and they are losing games, but they're playing in the middle of game like they are behind. And, you know, they look like a team scratching their heads for a little offensive identity. And one way to get your offensive identity, and more importantly, one way to make your play-action passing more effective, is to run the football. I know it's repetitive. I know it's monotonous. It just so happens to work.
I would say it does. And you brought up Michael Vick. What are your thoughts on the controversy this week and Andy Reid, you know, going one way with Kevin Cobb and then changing one day later to Michael Vick?
Well, I think it caught us all a little off guard, and so I'm not saying that it eventually doesn't turn out to be the right decision, but I just, you know, in talking to someone this morning, what happened in a 24-hour span that made him switch that way. I don't think the results of the games changed. And I wonder if I curiously wonder if this was all Andy Reid's decision, wasn't an organizational decision. Now the Eagles, it's going to be very interesting, and I'm just throwing this out there. I think it's going to be very interesting to see where this franchise is going to be at the end of the year. And I also mean that in terms of Andy Reid as well, because I think if this thing becomes unglued, I find it interesting that they really cleaned house of a lot of veterans in this offseason, including the quarterback. And sometimes when that starts to happen, they start cleaning house all over the place. And I'm just wondering if we're not getting ready to see the end of an era in Philadelphia. Again, they could wind up being 10-6 and win the division. But I'm just wondering who's really who is the real controlling member of the Philadelphia Eagles, who's running the organization, and who truly, totally made this decision for it to be Michael Vick. Because they went to an awful lot of trouble to establish Kevin Cobb as their quarterback of the future this offseason.
You know what? I also think there has to be at least a little bit of an underlying factor in the whole, you know, Cobb concussion issue, because there's so much pressure now on keeping guys off the field if they have had a concussion. And so I just think that maybe they decided to err on the side of caution here. Give him a few more weeks. We have a guy like Michael Vick. Let's continue to let this process play until we know we've got Kevin Cobb back.
I don't discount that. I think people would have might have been thinking that a little more if the turnaround hadn't been so quick. In other words, let's see what Kevin Cobb is like this week, and if he still can't go. And listen, Michael Vick has been quite the teammate, as we have seen so far, in terms of, listen, it's Kevin's team, and, you know, he's made these statements and so on. It's not like he's breathing down people's neck and saying, I deserve to play, I deserve to be a number one quarterback, I've had two really good games so far. You could be totally right. If that's the way, what they're really, really thinking, I don't think it's been necessarily conveyed that way. The way the organization, or the way Andy went, you know, one day to the next, literally changing his mind and so on. You're maybe right. Maybe he got a medical report that we don't know about and so on. And listen, the Eagles, you know, got a little heat in the first week, of course, with Stuart Bradley. You know, going back into the game probably, you know, sooner than he should have. So yeah, the concussion thing does have credence to it. It was just, I think it was the suddenness of the flip-flop that caught us all off guard.
Right. All right, then, let's take some time then to focus for a moment on the Bills at the Patriots, the Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock Eastern time game here at Gillette. Bills 0-2, Pats 1-1. Pats coming off of the disappointment at the Jets on Sunday. Bounce-back opportunity, sure. But the Bills have made a quarterback change from Trent Edwards to Ryan Fitzpatrick, and I'm wondering how much you think that could spark the Bills, which is what Chan Gailey's hoping for.
Well, they haven't made an offensive line change.
No, and that's still the same offensive line, which is largely the issue, I think, there.
Right, and, you know, they're still trying to get, I think, their feet wet when it comes to that 3-4 defense of theirs and so on. My friend Chris Berman up here has a saying. He says, actually, he's got about 400 sayings. But one of his favorite is, one is an accident, two is a trend, three is a problem.
Yeah.
What is 13, John?
What? Yeah. That's exactly what that would be. What?
Yeah, 13 would also be the number of times the Bills have lost to the Patriots in a row.
That's correct.
Coming into this game.
Yeah.
And, yeah, exactly right. I mean, I know Patriot fans remember what is affectionately or disaffectionally, that's a new word, referred to as the Lawyer Malloy game on opening day of 2003.
Right, the last time
last time the Bills beat the Patriots.
Correct.
And I haven't seen anything from the Bills to change my mind in that regard. Will they have some sparks in this week, maybe with Fitzpatrick, who I think is a better passer than Trent Edwards? I don't know if he's a better quarterback necessarily. But again, it's the guys up front protecting him. I think that's the problem. Listen, the Bills played New England very, very well last year in New England. Probably a game they should have won.
Yeah.
On that Monday night, and couldn't close the deal.
Right.
And you know, maybe the Bills would feel different about themselves and so on. But they look like a team headed in a very bad direction. And I don't know what the final score is going to be. I heard someone on say 31-21.
Yeah, Eric Scalavino said that.
Yeah, I know. Well, I wonder where he's headed right now. So I think he's got to give Eric a tough time. So. I'm going to say because they've won 13 in a row, I'll say the Patriots win by 13.
Okay.
I'll put a little symmetry to it. And symmetry. Listen, some of these games have been ugly, 10-0 or 13-0 or whatever.
It's
or
true, yeah.
Seven. There have been some ugly games and some bad weather in Buffalo as well. So, but I just, given the Patriots' shortcomings on defense, and we know what they are, I don't think the Bills necessarily have the personnel to take advantage of those problems. And like I said, I think the Bills' defense is still adjusting. And I just see this, and I don't want to say a day at the office, but you know, until you can defeat this team,
yep.
you'll have to show me.
Yep.
And Buffalo showed no signs of doing that. So,
yep, that's true. They lost a golden opportunity here a year ago in that opener on Monday night, and they weren't able to come through with perhaps, arguably, a better team than what they have on the field, or at least what we think they'll have on the field this Sunday.
Yeah, that's true. And listen, the Bills have they're. You know, you're going to make some cases that they might be as talent depleted as any team in the league right now.
Yep.
And you know, it's a shame, but again, it's been a long time since they've beaten the Patriots, and I think it'll continue to be a long time.
Russell, you're a good friend. Thanks for sticking around and doing that with us, and sure appreciate your time again today.
My pleasure, John. I will talk to you next week.
Talk to you next week, sir. You got it. Russell Baxter, who's the NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. ESPN.com, the worldwide leader in sports, all things ESPN, as I'm often said, and I will reiterate it here, Russell is the one person on the Bristol campus of ESPN University whose job is 365 days a year, nothing but the NFL. So the guy knows his football, if you can't tell by now, listening to him go, you know, through some of the breakdowns and all of the teams that he just gave you, especially the 2-0 versus the 0-2 thing here this week. And so he's a man that feeds all that info to the guys you see on the television sets over the weekend. So does a good job of that. We're very, very privileged and happy to have him here on the program each and every Thursday. Let's get a timeout in here, and then it's time for you to take over the show again for the last half hour. Need your emails. Where are your score predictions? I've only seen one or two. I'm still going to give you mine. I mean, is it just, do we have that much complacency in the crowd here? Does everybody think this is a walkover?
Everyone's bumming.
Everybody's bumming. Why? Because of the Jets game?
Yeah, I still get that feeling walking around the hallway.
Come on, people. Get over it. What has the team talked about here all week long? Turn the page. And that's what we've done all day today. We're turning the page. This is a huge game. They obviously have to win it, otherwise they are really up against it starting next week against Miami. I don't think it's the walkover, though, that anybody seems to think it is. If you are complacent, the guys down the hallway are complacent. Tom Brady has spent the better part of the last 2 weeks answering questions from this media, from this New England media, talking about you, the fans who go to the stadium. You're spoiled. You're privileged. Sometimes you're boring. Do we need to go any further here? The team, you know, I don't know how you can expect the team to bust their tails if you're not going to stay for the games, if you're not going to do what you can do to help them play. I realize, okay, yeah, these guys are paid money, blah, blah. Don't go into that stuff, okay? Don't go into that. What I want you to do, though, is I want you to realize that if you're a fan here, you need to get up and you need to show it. It's that simple.
I think part of the problem is, too, John, there were so many years where this team was just almost too good enough to cover up for the lack of efficiency.
And everybody around here is walking with swagger. And the fans, you know what? Fans all had big heads, too.
Yep. And now you're starting to see the team and the franchise come back down to earth to the point where they need the fans to help make an impact on
Sundays. Fans and are not answering the call.
They are not answering the bell.
Nope, they're not. So all I'm asking you to do is just get involved in this one game on Sunday.
And
get involved in this show right now.
And for those fans that are critical of Brady for making the comments that he made, I think it's ridiculous. If you want to show him what you're made out of,
listen,
show up on Sunday.
For anybody, I mean, Tom had a bad second half last week, okay? He had a bad second half. We all have bad days. I had a bad day today. Ask Kevin. Kevin will tell you. I came in here today. I said, you know what? I didn't want to come in here today. I've had so many things go on at work and everything else. We all have to suck it up and do things that we don't want to do when it's time for us to do it. It's called being an adult, basically. It's called being a professional. The guys down the hallway are that way. I know that overwhelming majority of you are that way at your place of work, okay? But when it comes to this football team, when it comes to participating here, it's very simple. Take a stand. Don't sit on the fence, because when you get set on the fence, you get hit from both sides. Take a stand. Who's going to win the game on Sunday, and tell me why? Webradio at Patriots.com. The Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482. Or chat us up on Facebook. Page is open and available to you. Friend me at John Rook on Facebook, and then we can chat during the game, or during the shows, rather. I don't know. I haven't even chatted during the game. Maybe we should do that during the game. You think that will be interesting for people if I call up my Facebook page during the game?
Multitasking at its best. Well, I don't know if Mr. Dvorkin would be too happy if you were late on a PA read, though.
Well, I do have a whole script of things I got to do, but I might try that this Sunday. So if you're on my Facebook page or you're on Facebook, I might try that. And if I don't get overwhelmed, you know, if there's, you know, every so often there's, you know, a question or two about the game and during commercials and what have you, I might try doing that. See, there's some incentive for you now. You know, if you're watching the game wherever you are. But right now, I need your thoughts on this game. And we'll come back and do some emails and such when we get back in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook.
Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriot season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, third one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on the New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together, talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
Wow. You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You got?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the change, patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services and Bank of America NA, member PIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Hey!
don't know anybody that didn't like this song. Good call, Kevin. You know what we should have done, though? Marketing geniuses that we are, a hotline should be 867-530.
That would be something.
Good tune. 508-543-7482, the Ace Ticket Hotline here as we hit the home stretch on Patriots Playbook for this week. And the Pats and the Bills coming up here at Gillette on Sunday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Your emails again, webradio@patriots.com. Score predictions for Sunday, folks. Let's get on it. What are you thinking? Overall, anyway. Is it a walkover? Is it not a walkover? Will this team struggle? I think what we've seen through the first 2 weeks is really sort of unpredictability, which might actually make it somewhat difficult to predict the outcome of this game on Sunday. And I'll share you with you my thoughts in a couple of moments. Let me hit a couple of emails from earlier today. Lyndon in Colton, California says, I've been hearing about Danny Woodhead being really small. He's listed as 5'9", 200 pounds, and Falk is listed 5'8", and 202. Is Woodhead listed incorrectly, or is Falk considered a small guy too? Now, he's considered a small-ish guy. I mean, anybody that's 200 pounds plus is not really considered small. Height-wise, you might say shorter rather than smaller. And Woodhead looks to be about the same in terms of overall height and build as Kevin Falk. Now, we don't know whether or not he'll be inactive or activated in time for the game on Sunday, or whether or not he'll actually end up taking a guy like Falk's place ultimately on the roster. Certainly, Sammy Morris is going to at least get the nod initially. Woodhead's got to learn the playbook just a little bit, I would assume, but it would not surprise me at all to see him activated. Don't know if he'll get any playing time. Lyndon also says, my wife and I are thinking about making a trip home, New Hampshire, this fall, and maybe catching the Colts or Jets game. Now, most of the tickets I'm finding for sale in the upper corner sections, 301 to 304 and 315 to 318. What do you guys think of these seats? I don't think they're horrible. I'll put it to you this way. My seats are in 312. Now, I happen to be on the front row of 312. So I'm right above the luxury box, and it's right between the 20 and 25-yard line. And I know that the people that I give my tickets to that go to the game love the seats because they can see the entire field, yeah. And you're on the home side.
Really,
you're behind the Patriots bench.
It's really not a bad seat, and we're not saying that just
I don't think
we
so either.
Here.
No, I don't think so
it's
either.
It's just a matter of, I mean, you'll be able to see everything. It's just a matter of how far you are away.
Yeah.
But, you know,
yeah.
Like the upper decks of the stadium are designed, they're pretty steep, so you get that good hangover effect. It's just, and especially with this year, with the addition of the new boards,
mm-hmm.
What are your opinion on those things?
The high-definition scoreboards are
those.
Great. And I'll tell you why they're great. First of all, if you haven't been here yet and you haven't seen it through the two exhibition games and the first game of the year here, it's an outstanding change in the game day experience. And maybe that's another reason for the fans to just suck here at Gillette, because they're all watching the HD TV.
And they are the largest outdoor jumbotrons in the NFL.
Larger than the Cowboys?
No, they're indoor. Cowboys are
technically
classified
indoor.
As indoor. So other than the Cowboys, we have the largest boards in the NFL.
Wow. So
which
there you
is
go.
Something to hang your hat on.
Yeah, it's something to hang your hat on, sure. I guess so. What happens, though, when the Cowboys open up their stadium?
Then we're in trouble. Then Doc doesn't get to throw out that great little
marketing.
But to
plug
your point,
there.
John, it's a great addition to the game day experience. But we've also tried to use those boards, especially in that Cincinnati game, to kind of incite the crowd a little.
You know what? I'm of the opinion though that
so we're trying to use them as a tool.
A couple of weeks ago, some of the fans chimed in on this, and I'm of the opinion we shouldn't have to do that here, okay? I just don't think we should. You know, the whole defense.
I agree.
Defense. I mean, come on.
But you
haven't
can,
we not have we not learned that already? At least a little bit?
I agree. If you don't know, if you're not educated enough to know when to make noise at a football game, and you don't know, and you can't feel those critical moments that come up where you should be on your feet, then you don't belong there.
Well,
opinion.
And part of the problem is I think the amenities and the atmosphere at the stadium, the HD, you know, video boards, the clubhouses, you know, that all kind of adds to it. There are so many other things distracting fans from the actual football being played. It is taken away from the home field advantage. That is truth. It is fact. And it's only going to be up to the fans to correct the problem. We can't do that by yelling first down and yelling defense and playing loud rock music and putting, you know, fans' pictures up on the HD board where you can see the zits on their noses. I mean, you know, we can't, we can only do so much. It's still going to be up to the fans to be able to make this a home field advantage that will once again make Foxborough a dreaded place for an opposing team to come into. Right now, it's not that way.
No, and you the fans, you guys have to take it upon yourselves and take responsibility. When you have that ticket in your hand and you're walking through that gate, you have to know and realize that you can make a difference. It may not feel like you can really, you know, one person can make a difference, but it starts with one, and then it may lead to a section, and then it'll just feed.
Yeah, no doubt. I just, you know, to answer your question again, Lyndon, I don't think there's a bad ticket in the joint. So if I had to decide on either the 301 to 304 or 315 to 318, I think I would tend to go 315 to 318 because you get a chance to see the other end of the scoreboard, other end of the stadium where you have the tower and, you know, the lighthouse, and you can see the bridge and a little bit better. And I think you get a little bit more of the stadium, full stadium experience. That's just my own personal preference. If you got a good price on a seat in 301 to 304, you should take that as well. But I hope that helps. So anyway, let's go to. Come on, let's go. Ha, Jorgen from Denmark, who says, exactly how do you define relative health? Ty Warren, Lee Bodden, Brandon McGowan on IR from the start, and Nick Kaiser out for an eternity. I don't think I want to see what dinged up looks like. Well, relative health. I don't think any of those guys are in relative health right now because they're all out for a reason. Kaiser is not out for the season. The reason that he has not been put on IR is because this team has every expectation that at some point in time he'll be healthy enough to return to active duty. All these players play with dings every week. Player that starts, player that's not listed on the injury report, they've got bumps and bruises. You don't go through a season without getting those. So relative health, I'm not sure how you define it. Relative health is probably being able to, you know, walk and run and cut and jump and perform to your capability. If you can't do your job on the field, then you are probably not healthy. And you probably should be deactivated. Toussaint, I think that's how we pronounce it. John, I'm a big fan of the show. I try to listen every week. I have one question. I love Bill Belichick and believe in everything he says and does for the Patriots. But I'm having trouble trying to figure out why he didn't rehire Romeo Crennel. When Bill Parcells took over the Pats in the early 90s and Belichick got fired from Cleveland, Parcells was happy to have him as defensive coordinator, obviously because he won Super Bowls with Belichick when they were together with the Giants. Why didn't Belichick swallow his pride and take a guy back he won Super Bowls with? I'm just confused. It's only 2 weeks, but I see the Chiefs' defense playing really well, and I can't imagine that the Pats couldn't have used Crennel's help. You know, I think, honestly, that's a question that a lot of people around here have asked. Don't know that they really had, you know, the opportunity to ask why that was. Other than the fact is that Bill Belichick, in my best Belichickian form and fashion here, would probably tell you, well, we like the guys that we have now. I would also tell you that Bill has said this even during the offseason, that he wanted to take more of an active role in the game planning and the play calling on the defensive side of the ball, with this defense being in the state of flux that it is in terms of its youth and relative inexperience. So he wanted to have more hands-on. My guess would be, you know, Romeo Crennel comes in, he's going to want, you know, pretty much total control, and he probably should have it. The guy's earned it. Maybe that's something at this stage of the game Belichick was not willing to relinquish. That is only a guess on my part, but I believe it to be an educated guess. Maybe we don't know what the conversations were, whatever they might have been. We don't know what the conversations were between the two men. Did they even have serious conversations about, you know, Romeo coming back in the offseason? Maybe he just decided this wasn't the right fit for him based on the youth of the team. We don't really know the definitive answer to that, but I can tell you that I think they did not ask him back largely because this is something that Belichick wanted to take on himself, the defense. So Sean emailed a little bit earlier and said, John, I agree with Eric earlier when we were talking about the matchups between the Patriots and the Bills. He says, no game should be taken for granted with this defense. If I were the Bills, I would challenge our corners right from the first snap. What do they have to lose? Fitzpatrick can come out looking like a hero. I fully expect, Sean, that to happen. Fully expect that to happen. I expect Ryan Fitzpatrick to try to set up in the pocket. If he gets enough time, he's going to go right at Darius Butler. He's going to go right out Devin McCourty, and he's going to try to beat the Patriots downfield. And if he has any kind of success at all, then they're going to come in with that power running game, and they're going to pound, pound, pound away unmercifully at the Patriots' middle with, you know, C.J. Spiller, Fred Jackson, Marshawn Lynch. Talk about a 1-2-3. You know, why the Bills aren't any better than they are is truly a point of conjecture at this stage. But in talking with John Murphy, their play-by-play voice early in the program today, a lot of it has to do with the inadequacies, at least so far, of the Bills' offensive line.
And Vince Wilfork, in his media availability today, referred to them as a three-headed monster.
And they are.
So 75 has taken notice. He's not taking this game lightly.
And he can't. He can't afford to. So you're going to have the Bills. If I'm Buffalo, I'm pounding away. I've got a deal from a strength here. You got a relative inexperienced quarterback, although, like I said earlier, he did play against the Patriots last year and did not have a bad game in Buffalo against the Pats, even though the Patriots won that game 17-10. He didn't play horribly. Touchdown and an interception for Fitzpatrick last year. But I think I'm trying to, you know, make him as comfortable as I can. I'm utilizing those three guys, and then I'm going to take a couple of deep shots against the inexperienced Patriots corners. I got to tell you, the more I think about it, I've kind of convinced myself here in the last 30 minutes or so, the more worried I am about this game on Sunday. And I'm not just in a, you know, Chicken Little here. Okay, who's next? Craig is next. Boy, the computer is slow here. Craig from Boston. I'm a former PFW employee, so a shout-out to Eric. Hey, Craig, how are you? Do you feel Gerard Mayo is a bust at linebacker? What? What? Is he the Maroney of the defense, or do you think Belichick drafted him just to tackle and fulfill a wrap-up tackle role? As we've seen, he doesn't rush the gap, never gets to the quarterback. Is that what Bill wants? Or is Mayo simply a one-dimension linebacker that will never be a James Harrison type? He's doing exactly what they ask him to do. You've got two gap players playing on the defensive line, guys that have to fill two different gaps for running backs to get through. And it's up to the linemen to fill those gaps, and it is up to guys like Mayo to make the tackles. I think he's doing he's not supposed to rush. He's supposed to stay at home. I think he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. Seriously, Craig. No. Bust? No, no, no. Heavens, no. Watch him play. Do yourself a favor, Craig. Focus on Gerard Mayo for 2, 3, 4 series in the game on Sunday and tell me he doesn't do exactly what he should be doing playing an inside linebacker. He's going to head for the ball. He's going to head for the ball carrier on every play. Andrew sends in his prediction. An absolute beatdown, 41-10 Patriots, and the stadium stays packed. If I could lay money on that
we'll
last.
We'll see. I'll be taking notes.
I was about to say, if I could lay money on that last one, Andrew, I'd bet you lunch
You'll
or something.
You'll be in the press
like that.
Box. I'll be down on the bench, and we'll be looking out. We'll be observing.
I'd take that. I'm going to guarantee you, if the Patriots get up 41-10, I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
But if they did, this stadium is empty halfway through the fourth quarter.
And they would be gone before 41-10.
No question.
31-10, 28-10, they'd be gone.
Now, if it's like 17-10 going into the fourth quarter, which it could very easily be.
And then people will still leave.
I think you'll probably see more stay here.
Yeah.
But as soon as
people
the Patriots.
Still do leave. It's
as
amazing.
Soon as the, I know. As soon as the Patriots, though, score to go up 2 scores, say make it either 20-10 or 24-10, the stadium will empty.
And being down on the field, for you know, like I am on for every home game, I'm down on the bench. You notice people leaving because you can see all the aisles. You're on the field looking up, and you can see all the aisles, and you can see like little ants streaming up the aisles. It's amazing.
And
the players, the coaches, everybody notices it.
That's true. They all notice it. It's pretty hard not to notice it when everybody turns around and has a mass exodus. Gustavo, our friend in Brazil. John, this week's game is going to be a walk in the park for the Pats. But maybe that's going to be a problem because we're probably going to forget the terrible performance of both the defense and the offense against the Jets. If the Pats blow the Bills out, we must not forget that we still have some problems that have to be fixed. Offense, I'm talking to you too. My prediction, though, 34-7 Pats. Come on, Pats fans, let's go to the entire game and support the team. Thank you, Gustavo. John says, I don't think Buffalo will be much of a problem. However, I do think it will be a scoring game. As bad as Buffalo is, I'm sure they're going to target Butler and look for other weaknesses. That being said, I think the ticked-off offense will hand the Bills a beating 41-17, and we get the wrath of the NFL for running up the score. John, I know I'll give you credit for this. You predicted this last week that the Patriots would get beat up on for running up the score. I don't really think we have that problem, but duly noted, John, duly noted. Gordon says, John, you just talked about us turning the page. We might be sticking with the Patriots and their inability to close a game in the second quarter consistently. I'm a diehard Pats fan, always will be. I'll complain when they play poorly. I'll be pompous when they score that run-up-the-score touchdown. I think the Pats will be out for blood this week. He says Pats 38, Bills 24. I can understand, you know, against a team that should be inferior, for lack of a better phrase, being somewhat upset or frustrated with the Patriots' inability to sort of, you know, put the foot on the jugular and step down hard, you know, and close it out. I can understand that. But I think that would be more of an issue for a team that would be in better shape, really, realistically, than the Patriots are, Gordon. This is not, you know, this is not the 2007 or the 2004 Patriots. Rich the Mainer says, I guess yesterday's email was too long. Perhaps today I'll get on. Sorry, Rich. I did read excerpts of your email yesterday. I believe the Pats will win on Sunday, probably 34-28. My only fear is that the half Patriots don't get the 34 in the first half, and the Bills score too much in the second half, almost like the Bengals. Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah, that's true. I mean, get up what? Let's say they get up 31-7 at halftime, and then they mail it in the second half. I don't think anybody wants to see that. I think we'd like to all see some consistent performance in the second half. As we've noted throughout the week on this program and some others, second-half performances have been just bad. There's no other way to put it. They've been bad. John also says, I'm calling for the fans lucky enough to be attending the game, not just watching it on TV, to turn the tables on the down-in-fronters. If someone tells you to sit down and be quiet, you tell them, I can't. I love my team. Why aren't you standing? In fact, don't even wait for them. If you see them sitting quietly, get them up and loud. Actually, I just ignore them, okay? If someone tells you to sit down in front, just, you know, don't turn around and tell them to shut up, which is what I would probably do. I don't want you shouldn't. You don't want to exacerbate the problem, all right? Ignore them. Actually, you should just keep your back to them. If they're behind you and they're telling you to sit down, keep your back to them. You stand up and wave your palms up, like getting everybody on their feet. That's what you need to do, okay? That would be a good answer. That would be a good retort. And you could tell them I told you so. You could tell them I told you that you could do that. Sheila in Clearwater. John, here are my thoughts. The Pats defense is young and inexperienced. It seemed to me on Sunday that instead of doing their job, the secondary was trying for the big play, so that left them out of position. I think this week Belichick will strongly point out to the players, and they will be a stronger unit. Just point that out to the players. As for the offense, I think they just had a bad week. Hopefully they have straightened out those issues. That's why I think the Pats will win by at least 10 points. Good email, Sheila. Good email. Thank you. Brett in Orlando. I'm so tired of fans saying they're going to jump out of windows and jump ship and go 7-9 or 8-8. A lot of fans are so fickle that after a win where the offense looks good and defense plays well, they say the team can do no wrong and will win every other game. And after a loss, people predict the end of an era. A win is one freaking win, and a loss is one freaking loss. No game should be taken for granted, but the Pats will cover the spread this week and blow out the Bills 35-13. But even if they don't blow them out, it's still a win. Good job, Brady, for saying what's on your mind. Sometimes you got to piss people off to get what you want. I'm wearing my new Kevin Falk jersey to the Miami game on October 4th. It's the first jersey I've ever bought. Good for you, Brett. All right, now I'm starting to like what I'm hearing from some of these folks, right? And Edward says, uh-oh, I do not like the new producer. He acts as if he is a member of the radio team. I hate that he chimes in as if he was a regular member. Let him run the board and stay quiet as he should.
Come up in here. Come up to Patriot Place and say that. Then we'll see what happens.
Wow.
You know what I think of people who email. Hey, Bilo. You know what I think of what people are who email in threats like that.
What do you think of people like that?
That's what they are.
Wow. Unsolicited shot at KC over here?
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Edward, let me explain. First of all, part of the reason that, you know, Kevin is our producer for the programs here on Patriots.com Radio is because we needed to free up Doc to do some more other things. His demands are getting pulled elsewhere, number one. Number two, we brought him in because he's educated on all things football. He's a former producer at 98.5 The Sports Hub, which is the flagship radio station for the Patriots and the network. Every once in a while, when we're sitting in here kind of talking to ourselves, as opposed to, you know, talking with you, the fans, it's always good to have somebody who's educated on football and educated on the ways of radio. It's always good to have somebody to bounce things off of. Not so much just to be a regular part of the show, but to chime in every so often to kind of keep the rap going, so to speak. Right, Bilo?
And he's got, you know, pretty good facial hair and to make up for what's lost on the top. He dresses well.
And the bald jokes begin.
You know, he's an all-around pretty well-put-together guy here. So, boy, you know, unsolicited, huh? I mean, wow. John, I'm sorry because I haven't been listening to your entire 2 hours. It's not like you spent the first hour and 45 minutes bashing Kevin and people are emailing, right?
We actually have had a good show. We had Baxter Russell on for about half an hour.
Oh, you had Baxter Russell on? Nice.
And then we had
How was Baxter Russell?
He was very good.
Russell Baxter.
Who
is this Kevin guy behind the glass?
You're killing it.
You just got killed.
Who is this guy, John?
I don't know.
What does he know about football? No. That was an easy target. I'm sorry,
Edward. To put it simply, I like Kevin. He's a good part of the team. You know what? If you don't like it, you can turn your computer down while he's talking, and then turn it right back up again because it won't take very long.
Oh, Kevin, hang in there. Hang in there.
Listen, you're a member of the team when people start criticizing you.
I love it.
Who were the other guests?
Well, that and
no, John. I want to hear from Kevin.
Oh, okay. Who were the other guests, Kevin?
Joe Murphy, right?
John Murphy.
John Murphy. Yeah. One or the other. The play-by-play voice of the Buffalo.
Okay, fair enough.
He's doing this on purpose.
I was here till 10:30 last night getting these guys.
Why'd you go home so early? You should have spent the other next half an hour getting.
I was watching the Revs game.
Wow.
Oh.
Exciting 2-2 draw last night.
Right. They were ahead and then they lost the lead, right?
Oh, riveting.
Yeah.
Man. Anyways.
Brutal. B-Lo, Brian Lowe for the Fantasy Lowdown.
That's
What's up, my friend?
Well, you know, a lot is up, and I'm sure you've covered all the bases when it comes to the Patriots, but boy, oh boy, are there fantasy news and notes, starting with the Philadelphia quarterback situation.
Yeah, baby.
The San Diego running back situation runs the gamut, and I can't imagine anyone has a fantasy football team right now with zero questions across the board. So we want to hear from you. We want to, we want to know what is worrying you as you approach Sunday at 1 o'clock for your fantasy team and your lineup. Because boy, oh boy, if you have a team and you don't have a concern, good for you, because there are a lot of concerns out there.
I would agree with that. All right, Fantasy Lowdown coming up. Thanks to my new producer, who I happen to like a lot, especially since he controls the buttons, Kevin Collins. Thanks also to John Murphy, the radio voice of the Buffalo Bills, and Russell Baxter from ESPN on the program today. My pick for Sunday, we'll wait until the very last second to do this, all right? My pick for Sunday is Patriots 27, Bills 14. 27-14. So if it's a 14-point spread, thank you very much. If it's a 14-point spread, I'm taking the Bills. Sorry. Not by a lot, but I am taking the Bills to cover.
You know that the Patriots swept the Bills.
There you are. Bring them up again.
You know the Patriots swept the Bills last year, but combined they only won by 8 points?
Yes, that's correct. They won by one here and by seven in Buffalo.
Right. The Bills weren't very good last year.
So I'm taking the Bills to cover the spread.
I don't blame you. I'm agreeing with you as far as that spread. That's a crazy
Could be 27-17.
Sure.
But I'm thinking it's going to be in that 10-13-point variety. It should be.
Yeah.
And I do think the Bills will make it a game into the fourth quarter.
Hard to disagree. Yeah.
So that's my thoughts, and we'll see if I can get to 2-1 myself, as will the Patriots. Same patch time, same patch channel next Tuesday, everybody, inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
Pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.